celebrate a few things. One is All Saints Day, which we are celebrating today. We also think of All Souls, and we also have our annual diocesan meeting called Synod. I'm not sure if they're actually related, but it does seem to me when we gather as a synod, which is our diocese from Cumbermere to the Seaway to Hawkesbury through to Western Quebec and Otter Lake, it's a large area, and we gather every parish sends delegates, and we become members of that body for a time. And when we gather, it reminds me of all the saints gathering. Not that we're all saints, but you can think of the years of people, the years who have had faithful ministry in this diocese and who gather each year to talk about our life, our mission, our future, and to celebrate the things we're doing and to struggle with some hard issues. And so we met this year to do all of those things, and we always have a lot of worship. We began with a wonderful service in the cathedral on Thursday night. We then met on Friday from 9 in the morning, and if you stayed for dinner, through to 9:30 at night. It's a very long day. If we look a little tired, that would be worth it. And then Saturday from 8:30 to about 2:30. And this year, our members of Synod from St. John's were Detlef and Anne and Brian and Stephen. Stephen gave his chat at 8 a.m., so he gets to sit this one out. And Carolyn and I represent the clergy. However, there are always many, many more people at Synod from St. John's. We always fill up our table and more. And many of you were there to help with displays and to help with the running of Synod. So I want to say thank you to you. So we're each going to give a little bit about Synod today and talk about what struck us and things of importance to us. And Carolyn's going to begin with the bishop's charge.
So as Beth said, it was the 137th Synod of the Diocese of Ottawa, and the bishop began it by instituting the Reverend Susan Clifford as canon. And he also instituted two new lay canons to the diocese, Robin Mackay, who's the chancellor of the diocese, and Sue Garvey, who is the executive director of Cornerstone Housing for Women. There were also two appointments as archdeacons, new archdeacons, Doug Richards and Catherine Otley. The gospel on Sunday was the prologue to John's gospel, the first 18 verses of John's gospel. And the bishop used that as the launching block for his address. The Gospel of John, he talked about as being so beautiful and rich in metaphor, and he mentioned metaphors like the living water, the bread of life, Jesus the true vine. And he said it's so pertinent right now for us, for our church today, because we're at a point where we're re-envisioning embracing God's future. We're seeing how we move forward. And the good thing about metaphors is that they allow us to mull on them and pray on them and discern and use them to be flexible and not bound by certain ways of doing things. He also spoke about the declining numbers over the years and how well we have managed that process with creativity and amalgamation of churches, the institution of parish area churches. But he said that phase we're working through, now it's time to manage the growth. And so in terms of growth, he wasn't talking about numbers of people in pews. He was talking about all those things that we do when we really carry out God's will and when we really live in the kingdom of God. So he talked about some of those growth measures as the community ministries that we all have at St. Luke's Table, the Well La Source, Cornerstone, Ottawa Pastoral Care, and I'm missing one.
454.
Oh, Center 454, thank you. He also talked about all the ministries we're doing for Indigenous peoples, affordable housing, and the partnerships that we've engaged in with municipal and provincial and federal governments. So he spoke about having to maintain our own congregations that are the living water, that are our bread of life, they're our source, but he cautioned against doing this in an insular way. So he said a statement that if you listen to his address, which is on the Diocese of Ottawa website, can be misinterpreted. He talked about congregationalism being dead, but he wasn't talking about congregations being dead. He was talking about that inward looking, that not working with one another, and the non-collaborative model of church. He said that can no longer be sustained. We have to start reaching out, partnering, looking outward, and embracing the diversity among us and the different gifts at all levels among us and the vocations and the things that we're called to, and draw upon those gifts. So finally, he noted that there's more growth to be done and there's more creativity to be thought of. At this point in time, climate change is a huge issue. We have to start looking at how the church should respond to that, how the church should respond to radical inclusivity and human trafficking and many others, but those are the examples that he mentioned. And he closed by thanking God for the diversity that we have, thanking God for the gifts that we have among us, and thanking everyone for the work that has been done. All these symbols of growth are because of you and because of all of us working together. And he urged us all to carry on this work.
So for each synod, there is always a keynote speaker who addresses the gathering at the beginning of each day. It's a two-day synod. And we've been blessed with some very good ones. Last year we had the primate, Fred Hiltz, who gave a very inspiring address. And this year we had an equally good one as well, a man named, who I wasn't familiar with, called Richard Lesueur. And Richard is the Dean of St. George's College in Jerusalem. Also a priest here in this diocese and in British Columbia. He gave two addresses. The one on the first day was about the Holy Land and the Anglican Church in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is our companion diocese and we have a very close relationship with it. The bishop, Archbishop Sewanee has visited Ottawa and Bishop Chapman and his wife have visited Jerusalem as well. And there was a pilgrimage, I believe it was 2 years ago, okay, yeah, 2 years ago, of women who went and spent some time looking at all of the good work that is done in the Diocese of Jerusalem. And it's really quite amazing. There's around 7,000 people, only 7,000 people in that diocese, and it covers a huge territory, Jordan, the West Bank, Gaza, as well as Israel. But they have 30 institutions stretched out over that area in healthcare and education, and they employ 1,500 people. It's a conduit for a lot of money that comes in from Western Europe and to a lesser extent from Canada. So it's very well funded, and it just does remarkable work. So Richard also talked a bit about the Middle East situation, and that was a little bit depressing. He referred to the announcement last December when President Trump said that they were going to put the American embassy in Jerusalem, moving from Tel Aviv. And he said that that decision has emboldened the authorities in Israel to take rather drastic steps that they didn't dare to before, including freezing the funds of the churches. In order to try and recover what they said were tax arrears, millions of dollars. So for a brief time, the incredibly important churches of the Resurrection of the Holy Sepulchre, where the doors were locked, that has been resolved to a certain extent, but they still owe that money. And another consequence was that Arabic lost its official status as an official language in Israel. So he referred to the fact that 80% of Israel's population is actually secular. It's only 20% who are believers. And so that 80%, their controlling narrative is not the story of Moses and of David. Instead, it's the story of the Holocaust and the incredible vow for that never to happen again. So a lot of the decisions that are taken there are taken in that light. Any resistance to drastic measures is seen as part of this overall history of anti-Semitism. So the second, his second keynote address was on Anglican ministry in a complex world, and it was really very inspiring. And you can hear it, you can hear both of them if you go to the Anglican Diocese website. So it was about the challenges of the church. He referred to what we're living in now as a new apostolic age. First apostolic age was the first 3 centuries after Christ, when the church came to terms with who it was, who Jesus was, sent out a lot of the doctrines and the understandings that we're still living with. So he thinks we're entering a new apostolic age where the church again needs to redefine who it is. And he talked about the paradigm of the exile experience for Israel. And that refers to when Jerusalem and the temple were destroyed in 567, I believe, BC, by the Babylonians, and the leadership was taken into exile in Babylon. And so out of that arose a whole new life for Judaism, which was centered around the synagogue, something that could be set up and that was portable. And the other paradigm that he talked about was the old one for Christianity, and certainly that was true when I was growing up, which was 3 Bs, believe, behave, and belong. So belonging to a church was not automatic. First you had to believe according to the group norms, then behave according to those norms, and then you would be considered a member of the congregation. So that paradigm has been reversed, not in all cases, but certainly in our church and across the country. And it's now belong, behave, believe. So belonging comes first. When a person enters a community, he or she belongs automatically. And that person's need to be with others is filled first. And conformity of behavior and of belief can follow if they wish to move closer to the center of that group. So we talked about a number of fresh expressions of church, a lot of which are actually familiar to us here in St. John's, including parish hikes, he mentioned those. Basically meeting people where they are instead of insisting that they come here and be part of what we understand to be Sunday worship.
So it's a very intense couple of days. It always, you come away reeling a bit because you're overwhelmed by a number of things. I'm always overwhelmed by the need that is being addressed, which you're just faced with in all of its complexity because all of the presentations begin with that. You're overwhelmed with the effort that people in this diocese put into addressing those needs. And you're overwhelmed with the notion of how, as a diocese, we ever set priorities as between all these things. It's almost like tendency. There's a finite number of people and energy and resources, of course. How do we ever get around to figuring out where to direct things and what to do? I have no answers to that question, but it's part of why it's sort of an overwhelming experience. And if I may, I just also want to take away the one other thing I took away from the and Brian sort of referred to this from the speaker was when he said we need a language of faith for outside, and I really loved that. That's absolutely right. He talked a bit about being in Banff, which is a place where he preaches quite frequently, and being in a church with stone walls at the foot of the hill, and expecting people, 6,000 people who come into the park every day to hike, to come down off the mountain and sit inside in walls so we can tell them about the spirituality of nature and God, which just seems wrong. I really related to that. So I want to talk about 2 specific things again. So picking priorities, picking which things you want to talk about is just as hard. But there were 2 things that struck me, and I think they're both examples of what Bishop Chapman was saying when he talked about growth, and what Brian was saying just now about belong, behave, believe, being the right order in which to do things. And the first of these is a little program that started down in Cornwall, called the Trinity Corn just gotten started, and it went from being like there's a retired chief, Peter Cassidy, who's this incredible man, and he had gone down to Cornwall and found there was a little tiny drop-in, well, not even drop-in, it was just a food cupboard. It was a place people would diminish and go. And he explained that Cornwall these days is sort of divided in half. There are people very well off retiring there, which is interesting, I guess because of the climate and property is not too expensive. But there is no industry left really in the town at all, and there is a huge population of very poor people. So he went to a place, which I don't think it's a church hall, I think it's a community church hall, okay, where they were doing this community cupboard, and said, well, why don't we offer some coffee a couple mornings a week? So these people, when they came in, saw from it and had a cup of coffee. So they started by doing that. Oh, and he went and got some tidbits, and that's what we heard about a year ago. And the first time, they had five people actually sit down, each by themselves, and have a donut and a cup of coffee. Well, it's a year later, and they serve 500 people a week, 3 mornings a week, from breakfast right through till noon. They have had businesses across the city partner with them. They've had all the area parishes around that part of the diocese partner with them. They have a legal aid lawyer come in about every other week to see the people. They have nurses and other people come in regularly. They mend bicycles. They have one on a little video talk about how a huge difference it made in the month because my bicycle work now is a fixed bicycle. And just the participation of everyone, that's growth. I mean, that's the kind of growth that actually makes a difference, and I just was so inspired by that. And the second thing, so at the opposite end of the scale, was the Refugee Ministry Working Group report. So in 2015, I think, Synod said we have to get a better approach diocesan-wide to refugee sponsorship. And work was done to set up some kind of support for that. The fact of the matter is, in terms of people, it's still Don Smith, formerly of St. John's, another person, a staff person named Joyce, and 2 volunteers, and that is it. And this is what they've been doing. They have had in the last 3 years, in 2015, they had sort of 230 individual sponsorships for refugees. They had just under 200 the next year, and they have more than that this year. In fact, by this year, by the end of the time that they will have accepted refugees, this diocese will have, may say, 702 refugees from around the world. And the real thing, though, that goes in with growth of it is that they are partnering now with 25 of our dioceses, Jewish Family Services, St. Elias, 2 Eritrean Christian organizations, the Ottawa Muslim Women's Organization, and approximately 50 ad hoc community groups. So those are the people who are coming in to belong to this motion, this movement, this together, we are also going in to belong to this movement, to bring people who are in these terrible states. So basically 1,000 Canadians have been involved one way or another in the diocese sponsorship of human work. So I mean, it's mind-blowing, but they don't have any support. We've got shown a picture of Joyce's office and every horizontal surface is covered by a sponsorship application. Every single one, chair included. So the theme of the paper is going to be chairing a committee to figure out how to make this work going forward. Anyway, that's my idea.
Okay, I don't know if it was by design or by good circumstance, but having an extra hour of sleep this weekend was a good idea. this is my first time at Synod, and it was a very interesting, eye-opening event for me. I was expecting lots of presentations and so on, but what was unexpected is they used videos for a lot of the communicating what the activities were. I was very inspired and moved by the discussions around mission and ministry. And then there was a section where we talked about, you know, diocese operations and so on, and financials and property and so on. So if you're thinking that was a bit drier, it was. When I look back, though, at the agenda, I counted up, and there were 12 presentations on mission and ministry, and 4 time slots where we talked about the operation of the church. So that focus, I think, was pretty good. One of the things that interested me was there was a presentation on the School of Parish Development, an initiative brought up here in the diocese, partly because it was much less presentation oriented and it was more of an interactive exercise. So that was cool. The school has been running for 1 year now, and it's an opportunity. I think it's about 6 days in the year where people get together and they learn models around change, facilitation skills, feedback delivery, information gathering, conflict management, trust development theory, organizational development. And I just thought that was very interesting in and of itself, that I'm curious about that. But then they did an exercise referring to, I think it's called Gibbs Theory of Trust Development. And they handed out a piece of paper and they asked the group, a group from each church, to in essence rate itself on a scale of maturity in terms of trust development. So you're either an A, a B, a C, or a D. And so in order to get there, in order to rate yourselves, it provided a number of questions. What do we have a hard time doing? And there were some examples of some of the questions is knowing who is responsible for something, holding people accountable, communicating relevant information, tackling difficult topics, and so on. So we all got together, we had like 10 minutes or so to talk about that, and then assess itself. So the St. John's team, when we started the conversation, we were pretty evenly divided between, we think we're at a B, or we think we're at a D. At the end, we decided that we had a hard time with the level D stuff. So then the discussion went back to plenary, and somewhat to my embarrassment, they asked the people who ranked themselves as D to please stand up. And en masse, the St. John's team, 7 of us, stood up.
That was the highest level.
And that was the highest level of maturity here. And I looked around, and there was a smattering of people, 2, 3, 2 over there, 1 over there, and I'm, ooh, okay. So anyways, moving on, and they didn't go run down the list, because that would have taken too much time. So they did the same thing for level B. And I looked around, and again, it was onesies and twosies standing up. But when they discussed it, they indicated that the point of the exercise wasn't so much to think about what you find challenging, but the point of the exercise is you should consider what is below that. So if you thought you were level D, if you're challenged at level D, that means because you're likely not to have a good handle on the level C type activities. So that was that kind of a left turn. In retrospect, I was a little bit struck by the thought that the St. John's team discussed the topic, agreed that we were at level D, was the best categorization. We acted together as a team and stood up, whereas all others, I think, stood up more on an individual basis. So I wonder a little bit if we may have missed the point of the exercise, but we did it as a team. Yeah. Okay, so the one other thing I wanted to talk about was there was a little bit of business to be done. There was a motion to change bylaw 5.07. And I'm sure you all know what that one is. Okay, if you don't know, it was to determine how many lay members a parish would be entitled to send to synod. So they wanted to change the formula. It was a convoluted formula, roughly assessing the size of the congregation. What was proposed was a slightly less convoluted formula that assesses the size of the congregation. So it was to account for new realities, smaller congregations, and multi-point parishes, and so on. Interesting, there was an email dialogue prior to Synod amongst us as to the appropriateness of using this kind of outdated notion of number of people in the pews. Nonetheless, when debate began on this, Anne was the first to stand up and kind of express some concerns around this. And then one after another, people echoed or provided a similar sentiment. And in the end, that motion was referred back to Diocesan Council to take another kick at the can. So it was interesting. This is the democratic process at work. There's one other resolution I'd like to mention, and that was the Synod passed a resolution in support of the Truth and Reconciliation Committees, and they have a number of calls to action, action number 59. I don't remember what it is, but the outcome, though, is at services and events, we will begin acknowledging that we occupy land that includes the traditional territory of Indigenous peoples. And for us, that's the land of the Algonquin Anishinaabe Nation. So I would also like to encourage those people who have access to the internet to go listen to the keynote address, particularly part 2 of 2. I thought it was very good. And finally, for the show and tell portion, there was a summary of the synod, and we'll make that available. I'm sure it's on the website, but we'll post it up on our bulletin board as well. And if you want to take a copy home, we'll figure out how to make that happen, okay?
So you've now had about 4 sermons, or 5, today. And if you're tired of sitting, I appreciate that, but just remember we sat for many hours, so you're just getting a distilled version. And speaking of sitting, one of the interesting things is at the cathedral, as you know, last year I was honored by being made a canon, and the bishop has now changed 4 of the canons, or 8, that are named for male saints, and there are now 4 female saints in the cathedral. And there's Mary Magdalene, Hilda of Whitby, Deborah, and Joanna. And this past year, they've been busy. The needlepoint artists in the diocese have needlepointed new cushions, because the old ones, of course, said St. Patrick and St. David and whatever. And so when we arrived, the new canons and the new seats, we had bare wood to sit on Friday, on Thursday night. And then the cushions were blessed, and we were given them, and they are absolutely stunning. They are beautiful. So maybe Lauren will put a picture up on the web this week of it. Just gorgeous pieces of work, bright and cheerful, and really unfortunate that they just get sat on, frankly. So one of the things about St. John's is, as you all know, St. John's has always had a very strong presence in the diocese, and that has not been diminished, that's for sure. We voted as a team on that exercise Detlef talked about, but we also ended up with a number of us going to General Synod next year. General Synod is held every 3 years. That's our entire country synod, and it is in Vancouver next year. And it was a very popular race amongst the clergy. 10 clergy put their names in because everyone, I guess, wants to go to Vancouver. I'm not quite sure. I was there last time and wanted to go back because this is the very important second reading of the marriage canon. so that everyone may be married in our churches. And I really wanted to see that through. Unfortunately for me, I've been re-elected to go in again this year with three other clergy, David Seltzer, Bunny Stone, and Mark Whittall. And then on the lay side, both Anne Chaplin and Monica Patton will be going to General Synod, along with John McBride and Kim Chadsey, whom you also know. So we will band together with our bishop and our assistant bishop and head to Vancouver in July, where we become members of the General Synod. So we don't actually necessarily speak on behalf of our diocese. We gather as a group that who governs our national church. So that's something that will be very interesting and I'm sure longer and more stressful in the past couple of days. But just to be reminded that there is a great cloud of witnesses, many who have surrounded us through the years and many who met this week and will meet into the future and are part of those lights that the saints hold up for us. And windows like that one that just got replaced, you can see the light coming in above the Good Shepherd. When we think of saints, that is indeed what we think of. And so may we all walk in the light. And we're going to hear an amazing anthem of that.